Hello, everybody. It's George from Ireland. So welcome back to my channel. It's talking about Russia's new offensive in eastern Ukraine. And so how long is this going to go on for? Well, well into next year anyway. So is Russia going to take Kharkiv, which is the second biggest city in Ukraine, is only about 30 kilometers from the Russian border. And I'm saying that they are going to take Kharkiv, but not anytime soon. It'll be close to the end of this year. It's always taken longer, everything they've done, than anybody forecast, like taking Bucha over a year ago, taking Avdiivka earlier this year. And Avdiivka was really only because certain Republicans in the House of Representatives held up that $61 billion aid package. But now that it's come through, things are tipping the way of the Ukrainians, and people, everyone's noticing that the Russian offensive is slowing down, appears to be biting a hole, is their strategy. Even they're not talking about some sort of extraordinary breakthrough. And the Ukrainians are building up their defenses. People all say they're actually quite shoddy defenses. But that's why the casualties are getting higher, why there's this frantic attempt to gain yardage now before those American munitions and weapon systems arrive in serious numbers. So, yeah, that's it. Just to keep pressing on various sectors in the front on the ground that that Ukraine can't be strong everywhere is reminiscent of sort of 1918 on the Western Front, where the Allied forces would have a big attack here. But when German resistance stiffened because they'd rushed in reinforcements, then they start attacking over there. And when the Germans move reinforcements over there, you start attacking somewhere else and you exhaust them. They just can't keep going like that because the front is well over 1,000 kilometers long. Remember, the Ukrainians, they can never have parity of numbers or anything close to it in terms of troop numbers now. Russians say they've got over 600,000 troops on the front line. The Ukrainians rather fewer than that. But the only thing is the Ukrainians could have parity number of assets, but those aren't being supplied. But the quality of the assets could be the force multiplier. If it's a weapon system with a longer range, was more accurate, and it's got just greater lethality, will kill everyone in a 100-meter radius rather than but it'd be 50-meter radius of the Russian equivalent, something like that. I'm not a military man. I'm sure it shows. But so Russia just wants to keep this going so that the Ukrainian resilience will run out. They're just wearing them down as an attritional strategy, but also it's the political will of foreign governments to keep supplying them. Notice only 10% of Europeans think that the Ukraine's going to win this war, and that's only going to go down. And Americans are not quite that pessimistic. So that politicians will be voted in who are going to reduce or cut off our aid, and Russia's already enjoyed some success with that, hoping Trump would come back or something like that. But 70% of Ukrainians say they were not willing to give away land for peace. And I'm surprised it's that high after these casualties. Well over 31,000 killed. 31,000 is what they admitted to. Russia thought it'd be over 100,000 killed. So so Putin doesn't care about loss of people, but he does care about loss of equipment. We know that, which is why he's so cautious with the Black Sea Fleet, keeping the eastern shore of the Black Sea Fleet like Novorossiysk, because he could throw them all against the Ukrainians, and okay, several more capital ships would get sunk, but they bombard the Ukrainian coast more effectively. They might be able to take some of those remaining ports like Odessa, Chornomorsk, and there prevent any grain shipments by sea going out. Likewise, the Air Force, you know, he had how many planes? It was over 3,000 aircraft of all types. If you threw them all at the Ukrainians, and or even if it was a 2-to-1 loss, even if he lost 600 planes for the sake of destroying the 300-plane Ukrainian Air Force, that would have been worth it to have complete control of the skies. So the Russians still have air superiority, but they don't control it completely, which they could have done. And back then, Ukraine had very little air defense. So in some ways, they're actually quite circumspect, and you can play on that. And they haven't used tactical nuclear weapons on the battlefield or anything like that. They haven't used the weapons of mass destruction. They've only threatened it. Russia's strategy, obviously, is to demoralize Western countries, spreading disinformation, blowing up warehouses, which have got munitions for Ukraine. Just now in the United Kingdom, some guys have been charged with starting a fire in a warehouse in London to stop munitions being shipped to Ukraine. Obviously, I don't know if they're guilty or not presuming that. And that they have tried this in Bulgaria, in Czechia over the past few years, espionage around the place to find what munitions are going where, things like that. And then just an access of evil with the mullahs in Iran, with anybody they want to, even with the Taliban and Hamas. Did they have a hand in that? It wouldn't surprise me. Those attacks took place on Putin's birthday. And he's had other birthday presents, like the murder of Anna Politkovskaya, also on his birthday, way back in 2006, that dissident journalist. So there's not going to be that much movement this summer, as the Ukrainians will have more weapons and more munitions. The Russians keep inching forward at very high losses, but keep this war going into 2025, especially if Trump comes back, and that's when I think they really might have another chance. And just by them amping up their war economy, by really increasing production to have more shells, more tanks, more missiles, more drones, and keeping up these attacks on Ukrainian cities, thinking that will break Ukrainian morale, which it really hasn't. And yes, it is killing people. And yes, it does cut off electricity. But there's actually a waste of munitions. I mean, forget about morality and legality for a second. If you put all that against the Ukrainian military, that would have more effect on the outcome of the war, because there was a chance this would work, you know, in the first winter of the war, but it didn't. Sometimes, at some stages, over 20% of Ukrainians went without electricity for a couple of days. Now, people are still sometimes going without electricity. It's something like as much as 20%, and they're increasingly connected to the European Union electric grid. So in a couple of years' time, it will have almost no effect. And the Ukrainians themselves are sometimes being unwise at hitting infrastructure, even civilian targets, even illegal and immoral as well. Just because I support Ukrainian freedom doesn't mean I have to pretend that Ukraine has never breached international law in the way it's conducted this war. So Russia thinks that, well, they can just keep going because they have the numbers. They have this almost inexhaustible reservoir of people they can throw into the battle, into the meat grinder, as they call it. And so that's it. It's just sheer weight of numbers and metal is going to win in the end, rather than some dramatic breakthrough. They just have way more shells, and that the political situation will only evolve in their favor. And they don't have new sophisticated weapons that are going to make the difference. One worrying thing for Russia coming up is those F-16s finally are going to arrive this summer, but obviously not in great numbers. They're actually quite old, used ones. So that they haven't taken advantage of their air superiority really whilst they've had it. And that's it. It's nothing particularly ingenious. There are obviously problems, which is why they dismissed the defense minister, the deputy defense minister, facing charges of embezzlement and accepting bribes. This is in a country with over a 99% conviction rate, and another senior defense official likewise. So it might be intra-elite warfare. It might be sort of underperformance, but they're dressing it up as actual corruption. So things are certainly going wrong. The new guy, Belousov, has been appointed defense minister. And okay, he's never been a military man, but that's unsurprising. In many countries, including the United Kingdom, Irish Republic, our defense ministers, they're very seldom have had any military experience. But it's actually been greeted with consternation in amongst the top brass in Russia. Another thing is, this was actually quite a difficult decision for Putin to make, okay? It hurt his heart because that bloke Shoigu was a good friend of him. I remember several years ago on Putin's birthday, he put out a photo of him with Shoigu and nobody else, only him and Shoigu fishing for salmon. And there was even talk that Shoigu might be a successor. I don't think it was ever going to happen. Partly he's almost the same age. The other thing is he's half ethnically Tuvan, and Putin, much though he likes this bloke, says, no, someone who's an indigenous Russian must be president, nobody else. So Shoigu had to be really underperforming for him to be shifted, and he's the longest serving cabinet minister under Putin ever. He's been in that post since 2012. Prior to that, he was minister of emergency situations. So he's been demoted by Putin, the guy whose favorite word is stability. He likes continuity of ministers. He's only moved him because the guy has grossly underperformed for 2.5 years. Partly this is deflecting blame. It can't be Putin who's responsible, so he has to escape to somebody else. Who's really in charge? Who appointed Shoigu in the first place? It was Putin. Who chose to invade Ukraine in the first place? It was Putin. Who is the commander-in-chief of the armed forces, which are not doing very well? It's Putin. All right. Got to go now. Thank you so much on my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon, donate on PayPal. Goodbye.